The Learn Me Something Podcast with your hosts, Aaron Stewart and Rich Plum.
All right, everyone, welcome to the newest episode of Learn Me Something. On today's episode, with me, Aaron Stewart, and as ever, the illustrious and frankly gorgeous Richard Plum.
Thank you, sir. I just got back from the Dominican. It may be a bit of a tan.
Yes, your glow of the
won't
tan
last long.
Yeah, exactly.
But thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Rich.
All right. Today's episode is one I've entitled Shamanic Entanglement. Continuing, I guess, the couple episodes back of entanglement in general, I kind of wanted to go and talk about the original folklore leading to a lot of the, I guess, scientific breakthroughs we come to
now,
today.
Anyway. Aaron, I must warn you, I was a shaman for many years. I think I mentioned this before on World of Warcraft. So
we edited that part out, but
I may not want to, you know, step on your toes and some things, but I was pretty good back in the day.
Well, the spells used today will be entirely different than what you were used to.
Well, I was a healing shaman.
There you go.
kept the many tank alive. Thank you.
Well, and we're going to get into where that originally came from and why they had that to use as an actual, I guess, avatar on, what was it, World of Warcraft?
Well, that was World of Warcraft, okay, yes. Well, the shamans span
in
many
general,
games.
In general, they've shown up on many games just because it is quite an interesting avatar.
William Shatner
aspect,
was a shaman, just so you know. And the commercials for World of Warcraft.
Yes. Well, that's
you got some big shoes to fill here, buddy.
Good to hear, I suppose. Anyway, so getting on to, I guess, some sort of subject topic or whatever we might actually consider what we're talking about in general. We'll talk about the original etymology of the word shaman is one who knows, right? So, Your healing shaman knew how to basically talk to the spirits and use those spirits in order to heal your people, I suppose.
So the shaman was, I guess, you know, back in the day you had villages together and whatnot. So someone was the shaman. That was the person who knew the history or knew the ways around the mind, knew how to cast healing spells.
They were kind of a mediator, right? So their original, to kind of group it up, like the idea is that every culture in history has had some sort of shaman, right? Has had some sort of speaker for the forces that they couldn't explain through physical pointing and speaking of what it was, right? You can talk about how things grow. You can talk about, you know, bringing rains and such, but the invisible forces that kind of ruled the Neolithic people's day were not the same as what we have today, right? I mean,
so is a shaman, I mean, you know, and I'm a bit of a skeptic, okay, on this whole elements thing and spirits and whatnot. I'm more of a realist. So is a shaman not somebody, and sorry if I'm jumping ahead, is a shaman not somebody who just, you know, people can't understand something because they don't have the scientific background or it just hasn't been discovered yet. And people are like, what is this? And here's a shaman with the answers. And that's all people want. People want the answers. People want someone that says, this makes sense.
Exactly. And a lot of their role was to use altered states of consciousness through the use of what was called entheogens. And we'll get into that later. In order to basically commune with the spirit world and be able to bring that knowledge back to be able to disseminate to the people and to say if the hunting season was coming and they needed to know what animals they could hunt, the shaman would go and speak to the spirits of the animals in order to call out the animals for them to be able to go to a specific spot and hunt them.
So it was a mutually beneficial relationship. Like the people were hunting the animals and the animals were okay with it?
And in that way, they could actually, it was kind of an ecological aspect where they could, if they noticed that there were no more deer coming around, that they could stop people from hunting the deer by making that a religious taboo, basically, right?
Man, shamans were the first green people.
And the deer spirits would say, don't hunt us for now, and we'll come back in a season, right? And so they would and hunt elk for that season. Right, because the elk spirit would say, "Oh, okay, we've got more elk," and it was the idea that they would tie into the balance of nature and be able to speak for, I guess, the environment around them.
Yeah, okay. So that makes sense to me. So balance.
Mm-hmm.
Killing the right things, making sure the ecosystem doesn't collapse.
And basically acting as kind of the voice for the environment, right? And one of those things that because they held kind of a revered place in society, people would actually listen to them when they said, don't hunt these animals, don't hunt this, don't do that, right? Mm-hmm. They were believed to actually, you know, possess this knowledge. In a lot of the cultures in like the rainforest, they would actually have to speak to the spirit of the plant that they were going to use for whatever ceremony or whatever, and that plant would deliver to them the knowledge of how to use that plant and what it could be used for.
And this was just the shamans that it reported to? The shamans were the ones that communicate with the plants
They would go into these altered states, right? And most people, if you're in these altered states, it's pretty hard to navigate. Right? Like if you're on mushrooms or whatever, you know, they had ayahuasca and a whole bunch of different kind of things that they would ingest in order to, achieve these altered states, let alone a lot of them, if there weren't actual like drugs involved, they could reach those states by drumming or by chanting or by, right? They've shown that you can actually align your brain waves in kind of the same way as taking some of these drugs, simply by the use of chanting and rituals. The Tibetan, the bowls that they,
mm-hmm. I've seen those.
That's singing bowls, they can actually achieve those kind of alpha wave states by just going into deep meditation.
Okay, so what does that do? I mean, so they take drugs or they go into the meditative state and then they're altering their brain waves, you said?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, for sure. Right. Especially if you're taking those drugs. Yeah.
And definitely. Then what's the result of that?
That's definitely altering
I've never
your brain
taken
waves.
Those drugs, Mom. So I don't know what they do, but what do they do? I mean,
it depends on the drug and the context that it's being used under. Right.
Okay.
They're like mushrooms, the magic mushroom. There was a cult in Mexico that for thousands of years would revere the mushroom. I believe still to this day they revere the mushroom as basically being able to unlock the mind. And again, using that state to be able to kind of unlock a lot of the mysteries of the world around them in a pretty primal way, at least, right?
Okay.
Without having the full explanation of things, right? Like I was talking earlier podcast about entanglement and about the idea that everything's connected, and they've actually shown scientifically now that everything is connected. And that's one of the main kind of precepts of shamanism in general, is that underlying all of us, there's this connection, and that by going into like the upper or the lower worlds, which again, we'll kind of get into later as kind of the practice of shamanism, they could go into those worlds, and by communing with the different animal spirits and plant spirits, they could use that knowledge to kind of help out society in general.
Okay. So they had a very important role in society back then.
And I'd like to think still today.
Do there? Is there shamans around somewhere?
There are around today. It's kind of a... Nowadays, you have it declined for a while, and they're trying to revitalize a lot of these old folklorists, practices.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, again, as science has kind of studied a lot of this stuff, their knowledge has borne out in a lot of different ways, right? Again, with the entanglement and the connection between everything, a lot of the plants that they've used for thousands of years are now bearing out all of this, scientific information, right? So they've been using it to, say, treat toothaches, and they've now found that those plants actually are helpful for, you know, exactly what they've been using it for.
Okay.
So a lot of this old knowledge is bearing out scientifically.
Okay, interesting. Now, is that the fact that, you know, because if you're in the environment and you're trying different things, I mean, you're going to be pretty aware of what, you know, if you put ice on a burn,
mm-hmm.
it's going to feel better. You may not know why it feels better, but you just kind of know it feels better.
Exactly.
I mean, is that what's coming out, or do they have
this is thousands of years of knowledge, like
right.
tens of thousands. Like the earliest known shaman grave in the world was located in the Czech Republic and was the evidence of a female shaman from 12,000 years ago.
12,000 years ago. Wow. Were they even...
Was the earliest grave of a shaman, but there's evidence that they've been back into their, like the Paleolithic days, which I mean, could be up to 200,000 years ago.
So there could potentially be non-human shamans like Neanderthals or...
I'm sure they had their own kind of version of.
Interesting.
There's a theory basically that it goes back to the migrations of two prehistoric populations, the Gondwana type. And this is, I believe, back when I believe the Earth had what an original supercontinent called Pangea.
Yeah.
And I believe this is back to those days. This was 65,000 years ago.
I don't know about that because I don't think the dinosaurs were even around then.
Yeah, see, and that's, I'm probably going
too far back. You're probably talking
about
the land bridge.
There was the ice age
and that whole land bridge from like Russia to...
Bearing out my ignorance here.
Yeah, I don't think it went back that far.
Probably not quite that far. I, again, was maybe Pangea. Just mixing up my time here. Anyway, so there were two basic forms of the prehistoric populations, the Gondwana type and the Laurasian type, which I guess basically split off into the two kind of classical forms of shamanism. From there, it's basically spread to every part of the world.
Okay, so what is that? That's the groups or culture?
Again, every culture in history has their own version of shamanism.
Right. But those first two original ones, that was two tribes or two?
Yeah, basically, I think those were kind of the first two tribes of people in terms of the first migrations of humanity in general. In terms of as far as we know, our prehistoric.
Yeah. So why do you think it transferred to like every culture in history? I mean...
It's just because, you know, I mean, until we had science and a way of actually, you know, bearing out through observation and experimentation a lot of the, you know, invisible forces that rule our lives, we had no way other than, you know, talking to each other about what might be driving these forces, what made the wind blow, right?
Yeah.
What made the rain fall? What made, you know, the animals... migrate.
Yeah,
know?
Exactly. And you look at a lot of the folklore like that exists in like Hawaii and Native American culture. It's all driven from trying to interpret that which they see with really scientific background on it. So, you know, I can see why shamanism is spread throughout because people are always going to wonder, like, what's going on? Where are the stars? Why are they there? Where does the sun go at night?
They were kind of the scientists of the day.
Right.
In terms of they were the ones that were actually performing kind of the experimental use of these plants and you know, giving people these, say, medications, quote unquote, right? Mm-hmm. In order to, like, a lot of it was based on the idea that, you know, their soul was afflicted by an evil spirit or something, right? So a lot of it was trying to drive out those spirits in order to recreate the balance of the body.
Okay.
Right? They would go into these trance states in order to be able to determine what spirit was out of order in the body or was invading or whatever, and they would use that knowledge to be able to drive them out. Because that spirit inside the body would, in that trance state, give them the information on how they could use that to basically fix the problem.
Right. Okay, sounds... I mean, I don't know if I'd buy it if my doctor told me that, but...
But see, back in the day, this was the best they had. This was the doctor of the tribe.
So what was, I mean, why was that deemed successful? Because I can't imagine that being successful. If you came to me and I said, hey, I got a toothache today, and you said, hang on, I'm going into a trance, I'll fix this for you right quick. I'm not really going to believe what you're going to tell me after that.
But that's only because you have the separate experience of actually having a doctor that's gone to school and studied and knows what he's talking about versus you living in a tribe of people and your only other, like, you may not know.
No other options then.
Exactly, right? Or that person was literally, they spent their whole life learning about the different plants and spirits and learning how to talk to them and navigate that world.
Sure, so probably pretty revered in the you know, trusting the authority, like this person saying that if you want your toothache to go away, you got to dance this way for 10 minutes.
Well, yeah. And if they did a bunch of, you know, treatments that ended up killing a whole bunch of people, that shaman would not be right. Cause a lot of their economic viability, like a lot of them held kind of regular jobs in society, but they would also sometimes receive just kind of gifts from people if they had done a good job, right? Like, so if they had saved the child of a, you know, parents, they would give them a gift or whatever and kind of offset their income, I guess, a little bit that way. Right.
That makes sense. Now, aren't I mean, I guess, you know, and sorry if I'm jumping ahead here, but having shamans in so many different cultures, I mean, there's some places and some cultures that had like an official spot for the shamans, right?
Again, every culture kind of had, because it wasn't every culture represented it differently, right? So some cultures, the shaman would live kind of outside of them. Some cultures, they would live within their society, and everybody kind of had their own iteration of it and version of I guess, sure. Worshiping or venerating the spirits. Right. Because a lot of what they did also was venerating like the spirits of the dead and kind of offering them and their families, the leftover people around them, kind of a bit of a respite from, you know, not knowing where the soul goes afterwards, let alone being able to explain, oh, they've gone on to a better place now. Right. And now we can go into this, you know, we can talk to their spirit and tell you how, you know, where they are and what they're doing. And it was kind of the original kind of seance.
Well, I think a guy named John Edwards a while ago did that. You familiar with John Edwards?
Which one?
Yeah, John Edwards. He had the show where he talked to the spirits.
Oh, where yeah, there, yeah, yeah.
I'm
yeah.
hearing from this area, someone with the name of Jay.
Right, right.
Who's got the Jay?
Yeah, they encompass so many different areas of the society that nobody could ever do everything. And so a lot of them would specialize in different things. So a lot of them would work what was called a psychopomp, which was the kind of mediator for the dead. They would talk to the dead and specifically lead the dead spirits to the afterlife and kind of mediate between the afterlife.
Okay.
And that was specifically just their job. They didn't do any healing. They didn't do any divination. They didn't do anything else other than specifically just dealing with the spirits of the dead.
Dealing with the spirits of the dead versus like the living, like they had to communicate back and forth, or they the spirits of the dead had beef with each other and they had to be like
a lot of it, like if say there was a famine or if there was a drought or something like that, a lot of that was attributed to spirits being upset with them or they had upset the balance of
the environment somehow. Out why
exactly, and so that was part of the shaman's job was
why
to
are you
kind
taking
of,
the rain away
exactly was to go into their trance state, try to talk to the spirits of whatever might be out of whack and try to mediate between the people and those spirits in order to try to bring things back into balance, right? Okay. So in a lot of ways, a drought was felt to be a problem of the people, that the people needed to kind of make changes with their society in order to help with, right? Which is part of the ecological aspect of it, where they actually were the check and balance on a lot of these environmental issues that, you know, where a society couldn't grow too fast or they would outstrip all their resources.
Okay, sure.
Right.
And I mean, that mentality still exists today. I mean, there are people that truly believe that Katrina was caused because of gay people in the U.S., right?
There's a lot of you know, the force of mind, right? But, you know, I don't know if... I don't know if the you know, God is necessarily that upset with gay people anymore.
Well, I would go with
I'm
a
sure
no
he's
on
got
that.
Other things to occupy his time with now.
Yeah, he's a busy guy. He's got to be everywhere.
Exactly, exactly. Lots of things going on. So, like I said, it's been going on forever and ever and ever, mainly just because we don't have any kind of real way of, I guess, speaking to the dead yet, or kind of...
I don't think it's ever going to be possible to speak to the dead.
Well, you never know, right? So... I guess shamans, the idea of a shaman, they're called or they have an inheritance of the powers, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So in a lot of cases, they would have to go through some sort of disease or they would basically have a near-death experience.
Shamans had to.
Yeah. In order to kind of be able to cross over into that spirit world, in order to gain knowledge and gain kind of the use of spirits from the other side.
Okay.
So they would have spirit guides that would come and help them to lead them to where the problem was.
Sure. So that was caused through having like a disease. I had to get like cholera or
basically a smallpox. they would be basically dead.
They would also have
a fever, high fever or something like that, something that would basically leave them pretty much dead, but which they would end up recovering from due to their having found these spirit helpers.
Okay. And I guess the shamans that didn't recover, they just, They didn't make the grade. They weren't
exactly right.
They didn't pass the test.
And I mean, there's a lot of cultures that don't necessarily have a specific like shaman, quote unquote, but a lot of the people use shamanistic rituals themselves in order to, say, appease their own spirits, right? Versus having a separate guy that comes and does these things for them.
Okay.
Right. So they don't necessarily have to go through the whole like death and rebirth kind of thing, right? But can basically just kind of gain that knowledge through experience.
So shamans just learn on the job, do they?
Some of them can. Well, definitely, right? And there was a lot of, you know, once you take the initiation, then there's years and years and years of training involved in order to actually be able to, because you have to amass, you know, your spirit helpers. You basically have to, when you go to the other side, you have to be able to talk to the different kinds of spirits and be able to, I guess, translate what they're trying to say to you.
I mean, I'm thinking that a shaman's, is that something that's passed down father to son, mother to daughter type of scenario?
It can be. It can be for sure. Or again, it can be something where, you know, you could be around that kind of thing, or the shaman might just recognize that you have the gift or something like that. And take you under their wing and take you into the training and that kind of thing. Or you may just decide at some point that this is something that you're called to, right? If you've always, say, had a green thumb or something like that, you've always been able to grow things. Well, that might mean that you have an actual connection to the plant spirits and they're able to speak through you, and that's why they grow.
Okay, sounds right. A little far-fetched, but I'm with it, man.
I think
they had a role in society back in the day because they, you know, people have to know. Right? People, the people have a huge and massive fear of the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And I think shamans filled that role of saying, okay, you're afraid of the moon at night, or you're afraid that the sun's not going to come up again, or you're afraid that your loved ones are just gone for forever. Well, don't worry. I'm talking to them. Everything's just kosher. They want you to go back to school or be a good person, whatever it is.
And for a lot of people, that's the kind of comfort that they need. Right? It doesn't necessarily have to be the absolute truth, and definitely that's the way things are, but it's more just hearing those kind of comforting words allows them to get
peace
on.
Of mind.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It's just that extra little bit, right?
Certainly. They certainly played the role. And now, obviously, like in today's world, a cleric or something, or a priest or something would probably be somewhat akin to a shaman, yeah?
Well, and that's where a lot of the decline of shamanism came from, was from Christianity and a lot of the other religions basically painting a lot of those practices as, you know, heresy and paganism and just casting it in a negative light, right? Whereas now, you know, we've shown scientifically that even talking to a plant makes it grow better. Right.
We've learned this scientifically?
I believe,
I'd be interested to see about that
now,
one.
Now, and I had seen, you know, evidence earlier on, but whether that's actually been borne out and whether it's an actual
I think
factor
I saw
now,
somewhere if you play James
whether it,
Brown.
Whether it might just be, yeah, right?
Play some James see, Brown and
whether it's just
grow.
The vibration of sound itself or whether it's, you know, the emotional impact or whether you're actually able to actually
you know, I've
interact
heard of
it. With it.
I've heard of that before. I'd be interested to see if that's an actual scientifically
seen. It
provable.
Was years and years ago that I had heard that, so whether it's still something they've actually still proving or whether it's something they went, oh geez, that was silly.
I'm gonna go with the oh geez, that was silly.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of that stuff that's like that, but then there's a lot more of it that's, you know, not silly and is now, you know, it was considered silly at the time but is now actual proven fact.
Like,
right?
Give me an example. Like, do you have an example of one?
Well, like entanglement. Right? The idea that there's actually a physical, you know, connection between every particle of existence. Okay. Is now being proven scientifically, right? The idea of say, you know, a plant being able to alter your brain waves.
Okay.
Right? To the point where you've actually reached a different state of consciousness. I believe it was mushrooms they've shown actually creates a different state of consciousness versus your normal awake or dream state.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it creates a separate state of consciousness from those two.
Well, I wouldn't know anything about that, Mom.
Well, and again, that might be something we'll cover in a separate episode. Mushrooms and the magic behind them.
I know. I read a really good article on LSD about how that opens the mind and how it helps people cope with issues and things like that. I'm certain that.
And how now they're using micro doses of it in order to basically alleviate depressive states as well.
I can believe it, man.
And for a lot of different kind of, mental issues that we were facing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so acting as the mediator of the cultures, the shamans would go into the different states in order to talk to their different guides and helpers. And again, different cultures have different spirit guides that they would use, depending on kind of what was around them, right? So the Inuit used a lot of the polar bear spirits and that mm-hmm. kind of, and that's one that I believe there's still kind of, it's one of the last ones to kind of die out, I believe.
The Inuit shamans?
Yeah, mm. I think they're still kind of practicing a lot of that.
Yeah, Inuits up in the North Pole, right? Mm. Up that direction, yeah. Mm. See, I'm pretty cultured. I get around, man.
So there's many different versions, but there are several common beliefs shared by all forms of shamanism. So such as spirits exist and they play important roles. The shaman can communicate with the spirit world. Spirits can be benevolent or malevolent. So that's where you could have the malevolent spirits who are, affecting the animals and causing them to not migrate properly or through the normal tracks that they would normally hunt.
So a malevolent spirit would be caused by what people have done or just kind of like a demon?
Could be a demon, could be something that people demons. Have done. It could be a demon created by something that people have done, right? Could be a spirit that was normally happy, but that the people have done something to
just
anger.
Got mad, right?
Exactly, right? There's lots of different reasons. And that was kind of where the shaman would step in and try to find out why the spirit was angry and how the people could appease it, if there was a way of doing it, right? So they would also treat sickness caused by those spirits. So again, with the idea that a lot of the illnesses that people had were caused by these spirits entering the body and basically wreaking havoc with the normal systems.
Well, now we know those are called viruses. And
yes,
microorganisms.
Yes,
and
which
bacteria.
And that's where if you look at kind of the euphemistic way of looking at it, where you could treat a virus as kind of a...
Kind of a spirit?
Kind of a spirit.
Yeah, I guess
entering the body and wreaking havoc, right? You know, their method of treating that virus might have been different, but, if the plant spirits that they were using are now being borne out as actually having antibiotic properties or antiviral properties, right? I mean, there may be something to be said for the idea that they actually were talking to these plant spirits that actually gave them the knowledge of...
Yeah, right? I'm here. Yeah, I just don't think plants... I don't think a plant has a spirit. And two, if it does have a spirit, I don't think it's talking to anybody. I don't think it's like striking up conversation.
Not in any language that we're able to understand as we're, chewing on a carrot.
And when it's up in the spirit world, does it still look like a plant or is it more like a cloud? So many questions.
Well, and that's, from what I remember, the plant spirit can show up in a lot of different ways, right? It could just be... like if it's a tree, it could be the actual tree and the branches of the tree would guide you towards, right? Or it could be, say, the wind blowing through the tree and you would hear a voice of the tree, right? As the wind was blowing through.
So it does have a voice, okay.
It can, right? I mean, Aaron. It's basically, it's a dream state, right? So it's kind of however you're representing that, or if you want to look at it from the shamanistic perspective, how that spirit was portraying itself in your mind. So they'd also employ trance. Inducing techniques to induce visionary ecstasy and to go on vision quests, again, to go and try to find out what spirit was angry or happy and what to do. The shaman spirit can leave the body to enter the supernatural world to search for answers. And again, different ones. I believe there's a commonality of having an upper and a lower world in the spirit worlds. And I believe the upper world was more kind of your spirit helpers and more kind of like the
it's like heaven,
wind.
Isn't it?
Yeah, kind of sort of like an angel represented, right? Like not specifically, able to represent as anything from Earth, but more of just kind of a higher energy.
Okay,
state,
sure.
Right?
And then Hades or the lower one would be like
see,
Hades
the lower
or hell?
World, no, see, in that, no, definitely not.
No?
Right? Nothing
okay.
to do with hell whatsoever. It was actually basically where the kind of more the earthbound spirits would dwell kind of thing, right? So like your wolf spirits, your plant spirits, sure. You'd go into this lower state and that's where the kind of, they didn't operate on the same vibrational frequency, say, as human beings do. They operate on a lower frequency. That's why they can't communicate with us in a normal way.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
And so you'd have to lower yourself into this other world, basically, to be able to communicate with them.
Sure.
right?
Okay, going on the spirit walks. Now, I have to caution anyone who may be thinking of doing a spirit walk. I don't know if you saw the movie Insidious. Yes. But the kid goes on the spirit walk.
Well, that's the okay? malevolent spirits that you have to watch out for.
And then they took his body.
Yeah.
Okay, so think about it next time you're going to do that.
And that's where the training of a shaman comes in, right?
A shaman wouldn't let that happen.
No, because they're versed in being able to recognize when it's a malevolent spirit and when it's a malevolent spirit.
But he didn't even know. He was out there.
Exactly.
I don't even know what he was doing. All of a sudden, boom.
He was untrained.
Yeah.
Right?
Someone comes and steals your body.
And that's where, you know, when you're in those other states, you are susceptible to those spirits entering in. And that was also where a lot of the shaman work would come in with these malevolent spirits, was people would go into these other states without being prepared for it. Because, again, the idea that, you know, there were specific people as shamans, but everyone kind of has a bit of that tendency. Everybody has the ability to tie into that spiritual subconsciousness. John Lennon called it, I believe, the musical undercurrent, right? Where he didn't actually write songs, where he was just tapping into that musical subconscious that runs through all of us and pulling music out of it.
Yeah.
Right? And it's kind of the same thing, that the shaman would not actually possess this knowledge himself, but would go and talk to the earth itself in order to bring back that knowledge.
Well, I certainly believe that people, smart people like John Lennon or shamans, for that example, I think their brains definitely operate on a different level and they see things vastly differently than, you know, people like you and I would see them. Now, I don't know if per se is a underbelly current of music that John Lennon pulled his music from. You know, I believe his brain just operates differently than we do, and he sees things a lot differently than we do.
But in a lot of cases, I mean, like meditation,
Michelangelo or
right now
whomever.
They're showing that meditation allows your brain to get into that exact state.
Yeah.
And 20 minutes of meditation a day allows your brain to go into that same exact creative state that Einstein used, that Elon Musk used, that all of these creative geniuses use in order to come up with a lot of these ideas. They use it by emptying their mind, and then that allows their subconscious brain to bubble to the surface with all of this information that's been floating around in the background that you're blocking over with all of your conscious bullshit over the course of the day, right?
Okay, I mean, I can believe that, because the day-to-day life and just thinking about what you got to do for the day certainly clouds the body somewhat, or clouds the mind
definitely.
For sure. You know, I don't think I can actually sit still for 20 minutes. So to try to do that
That's part of the whole thing, right? Is you learn that over time, right?
Must be a skill.
Oh, it definitely is, right? But it's a skill that they're proving more and more is of really beneficial use for your whole life and outlook, right? It causes actual changes to your brain and your body that have far-reaching benefits, right? They're still kind of bearing out experimentally.
Yeah, I mean, I want to see some scientific stats on that, but
okay. Well, let's talk about the risk of being a shaman.
Oh, there's risk associated with that.
Yes.
Really, I would not have thought so.
Actually, in fact, significant risk.
I believe dying was one, as you may have mentioned.
Dying
with the
would be one
because,
you know, they're like. There was the idea that putting yourself into this spirit world was again a significant risk for them, because if you get lost out there, you have no one to bring you back because you're in your head and there's no one to be able to, you know, pour water on you and bring your soul back into your body.
Okay, that makes sense. That'll probably also go along with like ODing maybe. I kind of see Tommy Chang as like a shaman, you know?
Tommy Chong?
Yeah, from Chong. Sorry, yeah, Chong. Yeah. From Cheech and Chong.
Yes.
I see him as like
a bit of a shaman.
He would be
a
shaman. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like he'd come back in and be like, man, I just freaking tripped, man. Like, damn. Come up with some crazy shit.
Marijuana was one of the traditional medicinal tools that they used.
So I heard.
As well as tobacco and, you know, the mushrooms and
peyote. That was a good one too, wasn't it?
Peyote was one. Yeah. Yeah. Iboga or
Iboga. Crystal meth? No, that probably wasn't one.
I don't believe meth specifically.
I bet you there's one now.
There was coca, like the cocaine, but,
there's a shaman out there somewhere taking crystal meth, or someone taking crystal meth claiming to be a shaman somewhere. I guarantee it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised, but, well, that brings up the idea of what's called a plastic shaman, right?
Oh.
where now with the kind of revitalization of shamanism, we've got what's called neo-shamanism, right? Which doesn't really ascribe to any of the actual traditional shamanistic methods. So it's not specifically, say, from the, you know, the Indians or the Siberian. It's kind of a mishmash of different beliefs.
Okay, sure.
Right? The idea of what's called the plastic shaman is a person who basically doesn't ascribe to any particular belief set, right? Which in terms of shamanism is not really a actual
That seems strange method. To me because I think about a shaman has most definitely subscribed to a belief set. So
exactly.
A plastic shaman, are they kind of cherry picking what they want out
exactly.
of the different...
Exactly. They pick the parts they like and that's their belief set.
And is this a current situation? Like
this would be specifically, neo-shamanism.
So that's the guy
on
crystal meth. Crystal meth guy.
Well, like, what it was shaman. Originally there was a guy, and I've lost his name. I'm sure I'll find it later on here, but he developed what was called core shamanism, where he kind of pulled again the best, the parts that he liked the most out of shamanism and created what he called the core concepts of shamanism, right? And that was where a lot of these neo-shamanistic principles have been kind of built off of that.
Okay.
Right?
Sure. So kind of cherry picking. Don't let the Christians know about this whole cherry picking thing. Okay. We don't want that to start happening. All right.
They try to, but it's it's tough because if you try to throw out part of the Bible, well, you could probably throw out the rest of it too.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't advocate for that, but it's not a bad idea.
I'm sure there's parts of every religion that could probably be rehashed and relooked at and brought up to the current age.
Plastic Christians too, maybe.
Sunday morning Christians, I believe was the
is that the term?
That. Yeah, that's the people that are, you know, Christians on Sunday morning and then they go home and do everything they can to have something to repent for on Sunday.
good people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, sure. We'll go with that.
All right, so what else you got?
That covers a lot of it. We touched on the entheogens, the use of different ceremonies involving the religious ecstasy. We haven't talked a lot about kind of the dancing, the songs, and the different like symbols that they used.
So, okay, question. So a shamanic?
Sure.
Thank you. Shamanic entanglement. Give it to me in a sentence. What is it?
Well, see, again, from our previous episode on entanglement, showing that the two particles that have any entanglement have a wormhole between them, and then, therefore that connection. The idea, one of the main core ideas of shamanism is again, with the idea that energy never disappears, right?
Okay.
So the energy that makes up you never really disappears sure. from this world. It always kind of stays here, right? And the idea that you can then communicate with that energy at a later date because it's technically never really disappeared.
Okay, sure. Right? So that's the shamanic entanglement.
That was part of it, right? Again, the idea that there's this underlying connection between all of us. And that was what the shaman spoke to.
Okay.
Was this underlying connection between the plants and the animals and us as people and the earth
itself.
The world
in connection with the planet, the planet in connection with the animals, the humans, the air,
exactly.
the birds, the bees,
yeah.
the plants.
Mm-hmm. Everything.
They have spirits.
The rocks.
They walk
the
around.
Rocks themselves okay. had spirits.
Can the rocks walk in spirit form? And
no.
how'd you kill
no.
a rock?
No, rock is specifically, if you need old knowledge, if you need to know something that happened a million years ago, you talk to a rock.
Fascinating.
Right? But then different types of rock also have, so you get into the crystals, and different crystals were believed to have different vibrational energies. So in kind of like the New Age kind of stuff where they talk about how like a... ruby has specific properties, right? And if you wear a ruby, it allows you to kind of harness those properties. That was part of shamanism, right? Where you could use the vibrational energies of a lot of like a feather from a bird was thought to contain part of the spirit of a bird. And so you could use that feather to be able to drive away spirits and basically harness the power of, say, the wind to drive out or to bring in or to, right, to be able to harness that energy.
Interesting.
Right? Same thing with, like, they'd use, say, bird skulls or different skulls of animals in order to be able to harness that energy from the animal, right? So if they wanted to have fierceness, they would harness tiger energy. If they wanted to have, you know, creativity, they would harness crow energy, right? And be able to talk to that spirit in order to use their specific talents to augment our own.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's a shamanic entanglement.
Yeah, interesting, right? Again, that, kind of the underlying, like the understates, the upper and lower worlds were all tied to that, right?
Okay.
Where your mind has a connection to all of those different states of energy on an underlying level.
All right, I'm digging it now.
Yeah.
Digging it, man.
Yeah, funky so, stuff. You know, I wanted to speak to the idea that we all kind of have, you know, this tie to the earth, and that we should really try to, foster it as much as possible, right? And try to, you know, get past the idea that we know everything, and that, you know, the idea of a spirit world is completely illogical, because we find more and more that these theories that they've held for, you know, again, thousands and thousands of years do sometimes get borne out. And just because we don't understand the underlying mechanism behind it nowadays does not mean that there's not an actual mechanism that drives those kind of forces.
I appreciate the where the shamans come from. Now, I I'm a skeptic. I don't believe in the spirit world. I don't believe that rocks, I don't believe you and me, anyone has a spirit. I don't think they're walking around. I believe in the theory of the energy. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't dissipate. It just changes forms. Good with all of that. And I like your message where we're all connected, you know, and, you know, kind of taking care of the planet. I think that we only have one planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
We're part of an ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
We're destroying the ecosystem based on just us being us, you know?
Because we don't have someone saying to us, hey, dude.
Or we don't have the respect of...
Yes.
Honestly, we don't have the respect of the rest of the things that are on this planet.
Of our elders.
You know? And, you know, you can blame a lot of things for that, Christianity. some other things. And I think the shamanism, yeah, I mean, if that mentality came back with, we're all here, this is it, and we only have this, you know, you're connected to this, you need to understand that you're connected to this, and that your actions have impacts that may not be felt right now, but are going to be felt in the future.
Yeah.
Slow your roll, calm down, and let's freaking, you know, maybe we don't chop down entire forest. Maybe we can figure out how we don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, how maybe we don't strip coal mines to the core, or maybe we don't, you know, pollute the air and, you know, all of these things. And I don't think we need to start investing in the spirit world. You know what I'm saying? I don't think we need to start saying that, you know, my ancestors are out there and they're upset with me.
I think it's more of kind of the anthropomorphization of that, being able to have, you know, the voice of the plants as something that we can actually listen to versus just something that we speak of, oh, like, you know, we got to make sure not to cut down all the trees. Yeah, but why? Well, it's because technically the spirit of the trees says that if you cut down all the trees... Right. Like, and I mean, you can call it whatever poofy, you know, thing you want, but in the end, it's really just trying to find a way of actually expressing the idea that, you know, the trees actually do have a voice, the animals have a voice. Right. And for us to completely disregard the idea that they're actually speaking to us without words is lunacy. Right. And that they don't have anything to speak to us or to say to us, you know, just through the fact that they have a spirit. Right.
Okay. I mean, I love the message on that. I think it's important to respect, like, the animals and respect, because more of a self-preservation thing because we need those things to survive.
Mm-hmm. It's all about balance.
You know, it's like we need trees because mm-hmm. that produces oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
We need an ecosystem because that provides us with food. If we start throwing that out the window, we're not going to have food and we need food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think it's breaking it down to a simplistic argument like that, you know, I think that's more logical.
The simpler it is, the easier it is for people
yeah.
to.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I dig what the shamans, the mentality of the shamans, and this is great, is that we're all part of it together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, translating that, I mean, maybe science could be the new shamans, you know, maybe Bill Nye,
that's
science kinda, guy.
That's specifically
Bill Nye, the shaman guy.
That was where the shamanic entanglement was talking about the shaman as a scientist. Right, who used experimentation and observation in order to interpret his world and be able to mediate that to the sure. people that he was talking to, right? Like okay. that's literally, as far as I'm concerned, where the original, you know, scientific theory started. You know, I mean, we have the, I believe it was, anyway, the guy that originally came up with the scientific theory, right?
Oh, yeah.
But that was something that had been kind of developing over millennia, right? Based on just the idea that the only way to actually, you know, have any kind of, yeah. you know, knowledge about anything is through experimentation and observation.
And shamans were the first to knock that out.
We're the first to, you know, try eating a plant and see what it did,
mm-hmm.
right? We're the first to try, you know, putting, you know, a poultice of, you know, bark of this tree onto the tooth of people, and they found that that made the toothache go away, right? You know, they were the ones that were actually doing this kind of experimentation mm-hmm. back before we had any way of you know, collecting that information and spreading it around the world
yep.
like we do now.
And good on them for that.
Right. Yep. You know, I mean, again, a lot of this, you know, aspirin was something that, you know, they discovered from an indigenous rainforest.
Yeah.
Right. What is it? The, what's the new sweetener they have now?
Stevia or something?
Stevia.
Stevia. That's it. Yeah. My wife hates
that. Stevia was a discovery from a rainforest culture that they have now appropriated and taken from this culture basically, and are now selling by the barrel load.
Don't know how I feel about that.
I can tell you how I feel. not good, but a lot of, you know, how many of the foods and stuff that we eat today were, you know, indigenous things that we've taken and now, you know.
Yeah. I mean, they have to be indigenous because, you know, that's where they grow.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I appreciate just the argument that you made there where the shamans were the first scientists. That really, it's a powerful argument.
Well, you know, it again just kind of speaks to where we come from, right? You know, a lot of you know, there was another part of shamanism where they would go back and speak to the ancestors of their people, basically.
Yeah.
And so there was actually a study I'd read a while ago that they've shown that the phobias of children are not actually handed down from their parents, but are actually part of their genetic code.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
Right. And so if you are afraid of spiders, you pass that fear of spiders through your genetics to your kids, not teaching them about mm-hmm. being afraid of spiders, but they're born with that. Mm-hmm. And so the shaman going into these trance states, going back and speaking to their ancestors, what if that's a function of DNA and they're actually going back and kind of going through part of their DNA in order to speak to that part of their DNA that changed when one of their ancestors had that phobia and it changed their, right? And again,
theory,
that entanglement idea that this energy that we are never actually disappears, but just kind of changes state.
Sure.
Right? So to say that it's disappeared technically isn't correct
yeah.
because we know, like, the only actual fundamental law of the universe, yeah. the only thing that we know for an actual fact is that energy is never created or destroyed, right? So that energy is still here somewhere, and just because it's not in a form that your body can use anymore does not mean that it's not actually there, technically.
Yep.
Right?
It's
dissipating out, but if there were a way of say, connecting to it through, say, a vibrational force in your DNA, right? I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff
funky,
out there,
funky
right?
stuff, man, and I'm loving every bit of it.
Are you on mushrooms right now? No, I kind of wish.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while, actually, but...
I hate mushrooms.
Really? Oh, I love
them. Mom.
I tend to be very giggly on mushrooms. One of those. Anyway.
I've actually never taken them. Honestly, I've never taken them.
Get blocked again here.
Yeah, right. Kids, this is how you take mushrooms.
This is, yeah. This is why you should only take them with adults that you trust. Because there, it can be a significant risk in the underworld of the spirit realm. If used improperly.
Don't do drugs unless you're a shaman.
Well, you know, it's you know, don't do drugs unless you know where they came from and who you're doing them with.
Unless you can go to the spirit world and talk to the plants.
Sure. Let's just go with don't do drugs.
Don't do drugs, kid. Drugs is bad.
Let's just stick with that for now. And anyway, so yeah, I think that covers most of what I wanted to discuss about the shaman and the general use of shamanism.
All right.
All right, well, thank you everybody for joining us today for our discussion on shamanic entanglement.
Appreciate it, guys.
Look forward to talking to you next week. And as always, floriant dendrite, or may your brain cells flourish.
Have a good one, guys.
You've been listening to Learn Me Something with Aaron Stewart and Rich Plum on Hologram Radio. If you like the podcast, please rate and subscribe in iTunes and share it with a friend. To find other interesting podcasts like this one, please visit our website at hologramradio.org.